I know we have to do a show, but let's just listen to this all morning. This is great. Oh, my God. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of July. That was the Wood Brothers and listening to Honey Jar. Good morning. Welcome. It's very nice to have you with us on this Wednesday morning, a day before the 4th of July holiday, Independence Day, as it is known. Let us go around and introduce everybody, and we'll get started and talk about 4th of July, amongst other things. We welcome you to join us, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. All right, here we go. Ira Fussfeld is with us. He is the Daily Freeman publisher emeritus, a longtime panelist, a media project regular, fresh from a taping. Good morning, sir.
What do you mean, fresh?
Well,
it wore us out.
Did it?
Yeah.
Can you make it for the next 90 minutes?
Yeah, I can. And I'm particularly happy to be in the room with all these newspaper people, and maybe one more who may show up. So that's
That's right. We're still waiting for Rosemary, but that's
newspaper people are always late.
Isn't that the? That was a good sequel, right? To Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
Still waiting for Rosemary. Chris Churchill is with us. He is a Times Union columnist. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good.
Very nice to have you with us. And Jen Smith, we saw her last at Tanglewood. Now she's here back in the studio.
Here
it's nice. Jen, I think, is upset that, like, you mean I could do this closer to my home every day?
In this beautiful sunlit studio instead
right.
of this lovely gray padded Wally.
Well, it's good to have you back at home base. We like that you travel with us. That's fun. And Alan Chartok, good morning, sir. How are you?
Well, I'm okay. I forgot about the media project. So what I did is I took a walk. I took a 2-mile walk. I used to take 4 miles. But, you know, I've had this little concussion issue. And I took I got back into the thing. I made some scrambled eggs. I brought the scrambled eggs, and I sat down in the study because that's where I'm supposed to be. And guess what happened? Well, I got a telephone call from David Gustina and said, what about the media project? Well, I went to the media project. This is all very interesting, isn't it? And what happened was I kept eating my eggs while I was on the media project. Well, that ticked off Rex Smith, the host of the program, mightily, and he kept making references to my guttural sounds. So that is my story of the morning.
Sounds like a great show.
Yeah,
can't wait to hear it.
Happy Wednesday, everybody.
Not only that.
That's a promo.
Not only that, but Murray the Westie, made himself his presence known, barking like a crazy dog throughout the whole
way
program.
Way to be that guy, Alan.
Way to be that
way
guy.
Way to be that guy.
You know, the great thing about this show is that it's live, unlike the media project, in which some of that may be able
well,
to be edited out.
Well, I was just going to say, people ask me all the time, do we edit the media project? And I say, I can't remember, you know, maybe once or twice for content, but we had to stop it a few times today.
So Alan could finish his egg.
No, so Alan could go yell, will somebody tell Murray to keep it quiet?
So how do you want your scrambled eggs? Scrambled eggs or scrambled eggs, right?
In there? That's what Roselle used to say to the kids. Okay, kids, which way do you want your scrambled eggs this morning? Scrambled
right.
or scrambled?
Well, good morning, all. Welcome, and at least you're fed and ready, Alan, and we'll get started. So we begin this morning there's a lot going on, and I want to talk a little bit about the yesterday we spent some time about obviously about the 4th of July celebration, and we did talk about the border centers, but now we didn't spend enough time on that, and the story has only grown over the last day because of the photos that are coming out. Overcrowded, squalid conditions are more widespread at migrant centers along the southern border than initially revealed, according to the Department of Homeland Security's independent watchdog. Its report describes standing room only cells, children without showers and hot meals, and detainees clamoring desperately for release. The findings by the DHS's Office of Inspector General were released as House Democrats detailed their own findings at migrant holding centers and pressed the agency to answer for the mistreatment not only of migrants but also of their own colleagues who have been threatened on social media. In June, inspectors from the department visited five facilities in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas and found children had few spare clothes, no laundry facilities. Many migrants were given only wet wipes to clean themselves and bologna sandwiches to eat, causing constipation and other health problems. According to the report, children at two of the five facilities in the area were not given hot meals until inspectors arrived. So what do we – we've been talking about these horrible conditions, and now a lot of the I think the worst fears have been confirmed, at least by this watchdog agency.
So who are we? So who are we, Joe, as Americans? Are we people who care about other people? And I think many of us are. It is awful to watch what's happening, and to get through this thing with those people. And then there are those people who follow, I think, the Trump lead, which is, you know, they came on their own and they deserve to be abused, because basically that is the message that is being out there. So who are we as Americans? It seems to me that's the question.
Well, you know, there's something that happened yesterday that was dramatically different than what's been happening over the last few months, and that is we started to see some pictures of the inside of these facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And these pictures are dramatic, and they're horrifying, and they come on the heels of the famous picture of the father and the drowned baby. And rightly or wrongly or fairly or unfairly, it takes pictures sometimes to get the message through to people. And so it just seems to me the last 24 hours, the outcry has been bigger than it has been in the last number of weeks combined.
But Ira, why do you say fairly or unfairly? I mean, where are you in this?
Fairly or unfairly is the question is, if you see a still picture of a crowded room, does that in and of itself mean that all of the conditions are as bad as has been described? I believe we all will agree that they have been, and we needed that picture to demonstrate it. Now, there may be some who will say, well, no, that was an aberration. That was just one picture. I feel otherwise. I don't have any, you know, reason to think that it's not like this all over the place. We finally have firsthand accounts from a number of representatives in the Congress. But again, I believe the pictures spoke volumes to people, and it's really started to get a momentum building about this issue.
But why did we have to wait until pictures when
Excellent.
We had
that
so
was
many
my question, Jen.
Reports?
Excellent
idea. And, you know, when is, you know, yes, these are ugly, uncomfortable truths. There has now been money that has been, in, you know, passed by legislature to say, okay, address this problem in an emergency fashion. But we don't see that action happening.
Well, and the pictures actually have been out there for years. I mean, mm-hmm.
Regarding this issue.
Yeah, they have been. There have been photos of overcrowded conditions at border facilities for a long time now.
You didn't have an attorney general, however, saying let's keep them in these conditions for days.
Rosemary's here. Good morning.
Hi.
Well, you came in fighting. That's good. I like it. Go ahead.
Yeah, the Trump administration has raised this into what they want to be a crisis, and even some Democrats are saying it's a crisis. There's been overcrowding. There's been problems.
There's been terrible,
with children,
terrible but, inhumane conditions at border facilities for a long, long time. There was a class action lawsuit filed on that very issue in 2015. People didn't pay enough attention. I do think the problem is getting worse, has gotten worse.
I would not.
Because the number of people has gotten
That's
larger.
Not the only reason. I mean, I don't defend the Obama administration. I think they had a terrible reputation on deportations and conditions. However, Trump and his administration have made asylum now as criminal. Family separation is policy, and there's an effort stopped by the courts for now to keep people in those conditions for much longer periods of time than the Obama administration.
I'm not disagreeing that the Trump administration has made things worse, but I do think that we have to ask why nobody paid attention to this until now. I mean, you know, this has been going on for years. The conditions have been deplorable for years. People who pay attention have been sounding the alarm for years, and nobody did anything.
No disagreement on that, but is it wrong that we're paying attention to it now?
No, it's great. It's great.
But
I just wish it hadn't taken so long.
How
many people had to
Trump?
Suffer while nobody paid attention?
Mm-hmm. But again, in some capacity, it's had attention one way or another, whether it's in this now kind of more hype mode where you have, you know, people making their, you know, legislators making their junket visits to, you know, tweet about it. But again, it still doesn't solve the inherent problem of doing something about it. And that's compounded now by the fact that we have people working on our borders that seem to, you know, endorse ill treatment of
they don't
themselves.
Seem to they revel in it. Jen. That's
what a
the
bunch
stuff
of morons
on Facebook. Wow, yeah.
It's just it's terrible. And yeah. Again, it's you can tweet all you want, but it's still not going to change the issues at all until someone actually does make an action, does discipline people who are, you know, treating people this way. Until you go in and clean these facilities, give them what, you know, people what they need, and get people moving through the system.
Judges.
When it comes to the Facebook aspect of this and having this Facebook group, I'm just curious. I mean, I know it was a secret group, but what about social media? Do they not understand the social aspect? I mean, you said idiots, but I mean, seriously, how do you put something out like that and not expect it to hit the public at large at some point?
An odd thing on social media, you put something out and you get a lot of acclaim and affirmation from
right.
other people, and you think that's the whole world. And I think we're all guilty of that.
The thing we're referring to is top officials in the agency overseeing border security condemned a secret Facebook group for current and former Border Patrol agents that featured jokes about migrant deaths, obscene images of Hispanic lawmakers, and threats to members of Congress as the lawmakers themselves on Tuesday amplified their criticism of the agency. Carla Provost, the chief of the Border Patrol, sent an email to her agents describing the post in the group as highly inappropriate and offensive. The Customs and Border Protection Agency's Office of Professional Responsibility and the Department of Homeland Security's Inspector General began an independent investigation into the post. The men and women of the U.S. Border Patrol are under immense pressure every day as you manage the crisis on our border, Ms. Provost said in the letter, which the Department of Homeland Security made available on last night. But let me be clear, there is absolutely no excuse for this kind of inappropriate behavior on or off duty, publicly or privately.
You think they heard from that Ms. Provost heard from the White House about this? Because it certainly isn't what they want to be hearing. And here's somebody who works semi-independently, apparently, within the administration. And as we know, Donald Trump doesn't like that stuff.
No, unless his son is retweeting it. Right? I mean,
it's true.
So what happens now? Mm-hmm. So we have, for whatever reason, there seems to be a greater outcry about the obscenities that are going on at the border. And each day passes, it's not getting any better. It's the Trump administration's role. Is it not to fix it? Or is the Trump administration perfectly happy because they feel the base doesn't like immigrants and could care less whether these immigrants all drop dead on our shores? There's the answer right here.
coming in over the transom.
Yeah, that's true.
But what do we? What
happens now?
Yeah, what do we do? I don't know. I don't know. Even the step forward, other than because there's still going to be the pressure to crack down on immigration, and if you're going to continue that, how do you then improve these conditions
but
as
we,
well?
We've seen that, you know, zero tolerance policies have not worked. I mean, that's a product of the Bush administration when they really started criminalizing immigration and sending them through these court systems. But again, the courts are not prepared to there are not enough courts. There are not enough caseworkers. There are not enough health workers in these facilities. And again, there are these facilities that are being overused from the issue of the border agents. So you say it's offensive, you say it's inappropriate. What actually happens about it? And the problem with that is that there's understaffing with the number of border agents. I mean, that agency is doing everything possible just to recruit people to fill positions, but they're not getting training. Mm-hmm. Again, they're not trained to handle this stuff. They're not trained to, you know, they're just filtering them through to be bodies to do what? And these are a lot of the questions that
I have the same comment about this in Abu Ghraib. What kind of training do you get to be decent to people?
Right, Rosemary. And who applies for jobs?
It's the recruiting that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. You know, we know a little bit about this. It's been studied in police departments and other places. They have a test, you know, in terms of where one's political leanings are. And we are not seeing a bunch of liberals applying for these jobs. And we can hear it in the rhetoric that has been so offensive to so many people.
Well, and I don't think it's a liberal or conservative issue, though. I think if you're working under these conditions, you have so many challenges. You have just an influx. You have language barriers. You have people who need basic needs met, and you have paperwork, and you're not given the support. They're long hours. It's hot conditions. You know, no one's communicating with these people to make sure that, you know, the agents are taking care of and say, like, are you handling the job? And if you're not handling the job, we need to do something about it.
In all due respect, I don't agree with you. I think that you are right that these are very trying jobs and the rest of it. But you really have to ask yourself who applies for them. And I don't. And I think we. Yeah. And I think we find in authoritarian type organizations that one type of person applies for it. It's not that you're wrong. It's that this has been studied to death.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back. We'll talk about this some more. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Mayo, and Ira Fussfeld on the program this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this.
I'll get you out of the clouds and get your feet back in the dirt.
Well, what that smirk right back where you came, as if you knew who I am, as if you knew my name. Turn around, steel backs against the walls. Too bad you didn't notice that I'm a 10 feet and 10 feet tall.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. The Devil Makes Three and 10 Feet Tall. We are playing songs from the Green River Festival from the artists that will be participating in the aforementioned Green River Festival. Friday, July 12th through the 14th, greenriverfestival.com. Our playlist, the playlist from this morning, is on the website, wamc.org/roundtable. Okay.
Hey, Joe, before you get into can I bring up something that was a point that was made yesterday where some listeners are objecting to our description, and by AOC and many of the panelists here, of the border camps as concentration camps, and they said that was an insult to Holocaust victims. And there's a story out about how a group of hundreds of Holocaust survivors have petitioned the Holocaust Museum to withdraw their objection to that description, that being aware, being raising questions, doing the kinds of discussions that we are having here is exactly how you do honor Holocaust survivors, by being aware of the potential for it happening again. So I just want to point that out.
Yeah.
And in other words, we're right. You're wrong.
Well, okay. But I understand why people would be sensitive to it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. All right.
Unfortunately, it's such a distraction because, again, we are going to argue about whether that's the right terminology. And the fact of the matter, whether or not it's the right terminology, whatever the hell is going on in those places shouldn't be going on. Let's worry about that, and let's figure out when we write history what we called it.
Another good point. Let's go to some letters. We have Michael, who says, good morning, panel. Imprisoning people in camps, in cages, and holding areas, all of those terms in quotations, will in time result in an American intifada, have not people ultimately will move to restore hope to their lives. If we fail to remember the past, we will repeat it. President Trump has lit a fuse. Mike writes, I cannot think of a greater image for July 4th than the image of immigrants coming to the United States as depicted in The Godfather 2. You see the migrants on the ship flocking to the side as the ship passes the Statue of Liberty. You see the hope and aspirations of a new life in their eyes as they pass Lady Liberty. That, to me, is what July 4th is. It is the promise of America that my grandparents, both sides, had when they came here. That is the promise I believe every immigrant has when they come here. But that's not the case anymore, right?
Nope.
Well, to be honest, we've been hard on immigrants in this country for a long time. This isn't, I mean, we've been a very welcoming country at times, but we've also been a country that has a strong nativist streak too.
So, you know, just as we were talking, and I don't know if this, just as we're talking, we got a press release from the Saratoga Performing Arts Center, and they had a concert coming up at the end of the month, and it was Yamato, the drummers of Japan, and they have canceled the tour due to visa denial by the USCIS of its visa. Mm-hmm. What if you have a group that's been traveling around the world for 30 years making music, what is this new that we're denying these visas, or is this something that has always been an issue?
At least for recent years, I mean, that's been happening. It's been happening with, you know, Venezuela last year, with many other.
Cuba. I mean, pre-Trump administration is what I'm asking.
I think we heard some of that after 9/11, yeah. Didn't we?
Cuba has always had trouble too.
Yeah,
Cuban artists, but it definitely seems more.
But Japanese drummers.
Hey, America first. We have drummers in America too.
Jerry writes and says, "What's happening to the $700 spent on each child every day? People who want to donate diapers, food, etc., are being turned away. Our nation has lost its way." That's another great point. There is a lot of humanitarian aid that is coming, and it is not really being getting through is difficult.
Yeah, we had a discussion. Jen, you were in on that about how you have to have some sympathy for the bureaucracy because there's not a system in place for these numbers, and we can't handle it. Actually, we can. The Red Cross handles this sort of stuff all the time. Why are they not involved? That's a congressional organization. Well, why aren't we recruiting humanitarian groups to take care of this?
And again, you know, I think that is part of the bureaucratic response. And that's the same thing that's happened all over the world. When I was in Haiti in 2010 after the earthquake, one of the first things I saw on the tarmac when I landed was dozens upon dozens upon dozens of USAID boxes baking with God knows what in it in the hot Caribbean sun, whether it was medicine, unusable. Water, maybe a chance, you know, food, definitely not usable. And meanwhile, the next thing I saw were people clamoring at the gates, asking for money, asking for help. And so that's not a uniquely U.S. issue. It's happened with pretty much any global disasters that there are still these problems, no matter how much we've learned with getting aid to people like that.
Screaming and acting yes. in the
background. Watch your mic here. Turn your mic on. There you go.
You know, but Jen's point, I was going to say something similar, is we send troops and aid workers all over the world when there are natural disasters and for other reasons. We send troops and other aid workers within our borders when there is a tragedies such as collapsed houses after tornadoes, you name it. Why isn't that same process being put into effect now? Mm-hmm. We have the means to do it. The fact that it's not being done, or it's being done as poorly as it is, reflects horribly on the administration, whichever administration is in office. But right now, it's this one.
I think that's part of the problem. I think it's that fear of saying like, oh, someone else can handle something better than our own government can, and I think that's probably, even though no one's said it yet, that's probably one of the reasons. But whether it's right or wrong, I mean, it's wrong. It's wrong that you're not enabling these humanitarian groups to do their jobs that they know how to do well.
You know, I understand that. I understand what you're saying. I think you're probably right. But the Red Cross is a government-funded organization. It should be in there. They could do this. And they get paid a lot.
Frank writes and says, "We need to announce at every turn to the American people that it is not against the law for foreigners to seek asylum in the USA, but it is against the law to put them in internment camps, starve them, ignore them, kidnap them, perform child abuse, etc. It's the Trump administration that are the criminals. Prosecute them." We go next to Steve, who says, "Did the children get their baths? Did they get their clean clothes? What's the delay? If not, it's not going to auto-correct." And that is a good point. We're highlighting and spotlighting these abuses. Has the behavior changed within those camps?
How would we know?
That's right. Robert writes, the Trump administration's current game is to admit that immigrant detention facility conditions are abysmal, but they claim it's the best they can do until Congress takes action. The reality is that Trump has made the situation much worse by instituting policies that keep people detained longer, specifically slowing down the asylum review process and imprisoning children who cross the border with relatives other than their parents. Unfortunately, I haven't heard anybody in the news media call Trump spokespeople out for this duplicity. And I think that's it for the first batch of letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'd love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org.
Joe, I think that the one thing that we all have to remember here is that this is happening because of the specific political motivations and needs of Donald Trump. That's what this is. We can put any kind of face on it, that it used to happen, that other people have done it. The reason that he's not going to help Salvador or any other place is because that doesn't fit in with his needs for his base. I think it comes down to that.
So are you saying that and I'm not disagreeing because I'm sometimes come to that conclusion.
Yes, I am, Ira.
That Trump feels it's to his benefit politically to have what's going on go on right now because his base is saying a pox on the immigrants and let them waste away.
Without question, in my mind. And now what happens is these guys, this White House is polling all the time, and we've seen it before. So when it gets to be bad enough, when there are the independent, because those are the people who they really are looking at all the time, they've got their base. In order to win, they got to get the people in the middle. When it gets too bad, then they're going to turn around and they'll make a different approach. And they've done that before. But that's what they have to jiggle between the people who want the base and the people who will vote them out of office if they're too over the top.
Piggyback onto what we're talking about in regards to immigration, but I just wanted to slip in. It's not a major story. Well, I mean, it depends on how you look at it. It's very concerning. But the president's comments on homelessness.
Oh wow,
well, that was incomprehensible.
It was incomprehensible, but I mean, it is disturbing. I don't know. So for those of you, I wasn't aware of this until I saw it in the Washington Post. Fox News on Monday ran a interview that Tucker Carlson did with the president when they were in Japan, and Carlson moved on to one of his pet topics of late, homelessness and decay in American cities. The president said, it's a phenomena that started 2 years ago. It's disgraceful. I'm going to look at it very seriously. We're doing some other things that you probably notice, like of the very important things that, but we're looking at because you can't do that. Okay. Quote. It continues. Trump assures that he might do something and also that he's looking at doing something, but he also says he's already doing something, including some of the very important things that we're doing now. Got it, asked the New York Times. The Washington Post. It continues. The president, quote, you can't have what's happening where police officers are getting sick just by walking the beat. I mean, they're getting actually very sick. Where people are getting sick, where people living there, living in hell, too.
Crazy.
Well, is the homeless the next target is my question.
He never even mentions homelessness. How do you even know that's what he's talking about?
Well, the question was in regards to homelessness and filth and urban decay.
Trash in the streets and stuff. I can't even tell that when I read it. I read it twice.
Although some of them have mental problems where they don't even know they're living that way. In fact, perhaps they like living that way. They can't do that.
Right.
I just thought that I watched that and I thought that, that Tucker Carlson asked him a question for which he was not prepared, and he, rather than say I have to study it or something some normal person would say, he felt he had to have an answer. It was like watching Professor Irwin Corey answer a question. It was just all over the place. It made no sense. And the only other thing that surprised me was he said it's been going on for about 2 years, which of course is the length of his term. You would have thought he would blame it on Obama like he does everything
else. Yeah, that was a weird answer, but I agree with you. I just think he was struggling to come up with, to fill the airspace almost. And
then he turned it on to blaming California for its problems, and then also saying that he fixed homelessness in D.C., none of which is true.
Yeah, well, playing Democratic cities.
I just want to take just a quick moment. I've worked with Ira Fussfeld for many, many years, and I just respect it any time he can bring up Professor Irwin Corey.
That's right.
That's all. Go ahead, Chris.
World's foremost authority.
World's foremost authority. Yes, go ahead.
Strangely, though, he did just sign an executive order that somewhat attempts to address, you know, at least homelessness or the construction of affordable housing, and he didn't mention it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that he's missed a lot of opportunities to talk about policies that are actually almost bipartisan and actually aim to solve problems. But again, I think there's not a lot of insight into how it's actually being done and when it's going to be done and what's actually a priority. So if he's making the case that homelessness is an issue, then
well, homelessness is an issue.
It absolutely is, but it's not a priority issue of this administration. It doesn't seem.
No, and it probably isn't. I mean, in some ways, isn't really a federal issue. It's kind of a local problem. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible problem in California right now. Mm-hmm. It's a lesser problem in other parts
of the
country.
And if you look at what the governor said, he talks about lack of federal funding, but I think there's also bigger issues with the bureaucracy of delivering that as well.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have other items to discuss. We'll do that right after this.
I don't talk to the devil when he calls my name. Sometimes when I'm losing it all.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion. I have a lot of letters. I just want to say that just for note, when I say I'm out of letters, I'm out of the paper that I have in front of me. We have tons of letters. It's just the time that we have for them. So I don't want people to think that, we're like, we need more. I mean, we always want your letters, but just so you know, if you get it. I have a whole stack here.
If they weren't authentic, you couldn't do
that's
that.
That's right. Yeah. The point is that we can't read every letter.
Right.
That's the point.
Well, if you're getting 1,000 letters, you are trying to pick out representative letters,
exactly.
and our wonderful Sarah LaDuke does that work and hands them
right.
over. That's what this is all about. There are people who literally cry that they are being purposely ignored, and that's nonsense.
Well, we get that in the newspaper business all the time. I used to handle the letters to the editor, and you simply have more letters than you have space.
So what did you say to people?
You say exactly that. We don't use all the letters. We try to get a representative amount for each point of view.
Yeah, we don't. We can't guarantee that your letter will be read on the air.
If you get 50 letters about abortion, more or less all saying the same thing, you're not going to print all 50. You'll print several, but,
Well, I have some fine letters that are representative of what people are saying.
Fresh, they look fresh.
They yeah. Elias writes, I think everyone's attention has been brought to the deplorable treatment of aliens when it was discovered that Trump had purposely ordered that conditions be made horrible so that people would be dissuaded from coming here. Trump's policy was to make a bad situation worse.
Aliens, as in Roswell? Which is another story.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
I'm sorry, Alan?
No, I didn't hear what Rosemary said.
She was saying about aliens, but we can get it. All right. Terrence writes, I believe that the panel is playing right into the hands of Trump and the nationalist types in the way they approach the topic of immigration in 2019. Instead of emphasizing issues unrelated to the economic well-being of Americans, they might argue more for expanding the estate taxes, raising the income tax on upper incomes, lowering tuition at state schools, allowing the federal government to negotiate prices with drug companies, etc. If the liberal side had the same passion about issues affecting Americans, I think they would have more credibility. It comes across as tone-deaf and patronizing when great emphasis is placed on issues unrelated to citizens. It's the economy, stupid.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't that what most of the Democrats are talking about?
And so our kids would say, whatever. So, you know, there is that. And people are going to feel that way on all sides of issues. They will project whatever their needs are into a letter or a question. That's just the way it is.
I'm a bleeding heart liberal, and I believe in all of those things, lower tuition,
sure,
and tax equality. But I don't think that they have to come at the price of treating people humanely on the border.
Well, you know, MSNBC has now announced that they're not going to cover Trump's July 4th parade. What do you think of that?
Oh, wow.
Well, they said they're going to monitor it, and then if there are pieces of it that are worth airing, they'll air it. And that's what let me explain something to the people. That's what people do in journalism. They go in an event and they report what's important and they ignore what's not important. And one of the problems we had in the last cycle was that they turned the TV cameras on and let Trump have his way. And I think you're going to see, except for Fox, which is still pretty much airing all of his stuff, the other organizations are going to watch it and edit it and air what's important and not what's not.
Okay, so does – I love this conversation. Okay, so does CNN follow suit?
Exactly.
I think that they will – if they want to be real journalists, they will.
Oh, Ira, you know.
Yeah, but they probably will run it, right?
No, I don't think they will run. They're not running his rallies in their entirety. They did the last time.
Well, July 4th is sort of a unique time in America. And you got a president of the United States. I'm not arguing for it.
Everybody loves
I'm
tanks.
Not saying that they're not going to air the fact that this is going on or that there are things worth airing that come out of it. But if Trump gets up in that microphone and gives a stump speech, they're going to dump out of it. If he gives a 4th of July speech, I suspect they'll stay with that.
Well, I think Joe's question was prescient, which is, should or should they not CNN follow suit? Now, we know the news director is sitting up there with his finger in the air, which is seeing which way the wind is blowing, right, and saying, will more people watch us if we do this? And our competition, MSNBC, isn't doing it, and we have to decide to do it. So there are all kinds of reasons for doing it or not doing it. I know one thing, and that is that Murray the dog doesn't like any of this.
I'm not sure I agree with your characterization of holding the finger up to the wind. If you're saying that's what they're making journalism decisions, news decisions, okay. But the sticking the finger.
What do you mean,
okay?
Is it or not?
It's not the same thing as the image of sticking their finger up in the wind, and seeing which way the wind blows. I think is a little bit too cynical.
Yeah,
but,
well,
but Ira, didn't they do the same thing during the 2016? I mean, it was ratings that drove their decision to air every Trump speech unedited.
That's correct.
In their entirety. So why wouldn't they make the same decision?
Well,
now?
We have to see what they do, but the fallout from that was that they believed they said both CNN and MSNBC that they didn't do it the right way. So let's see what they do this time.
But the other thing too is that if let's say if does it make a difference if you run the speech and then you have all of your talking heads then come on and just eviscerate the president for what he just said and did?
Don't get me started on these panels. This panel I love, but the words that scare
panels are terrible.
Yeah.
The words that scare me the most when you listen to watch CNN is, and now let's hear from our panel, where we've got a news story and then a half hour with 14 boxes like the Hollywood Squares on TV. So the answer is they probably will do that, but I don't know that serves the country very well. I just want to know what the news is. There's a you know, every newspaper.
So then you do want to hear the whole speech.
No, I don't want to hear the whole speech. I want to hear the speech as reported by a journalist who has been trained and is professional and will report what the president said. I don't want to hear all the
You know,
other
and
stuff.
Sometimes you have to trust people, too. I mean, if the president is giving a speech and you air the speech, trust people to make up their own minds about it.
Well, that's what C-SPAN does.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we have to filter everything for everybody. People are plenty capable of figuring out what's propaganda and what to believe and what not to believe.
I wish I could agree with you.
I always worried about that criticism that because Trump rallies were aired gavel to gavel, that somehow helped him. And why didn't people watch that gavel to gavel coverage and say, oh, my God, he's crazy. I'm not voting for him.
I think they thought it was entertaining. And, boy, wouldn't it be great if we had 4 years of this.
Well, and you're always waiting to see what he was going to say next.
Yeah, but I think Rosemary makes a very good point.
To be honest,
the fact of the matter is once you start – to say, we're going to play this because we like it or because we don't think it's correct, you really are going down a very slippery slope in American journalism. And just imagine if it was Obama that you were talking about and that Fox would say, okay, well, we're not going to do his speeches or what he's talking
TV
about.
TV stations show every minute of the Thanksgiving Day parade that Macy's puts on, shows every minute of the New Year's celebration. This is another holiday. I have a hard time figuring out why they would censor
different.
That. Why?
Well, first of all, the Macy's Day parade is sponsored.
Mm-hmm. And because it's Trump?
No, they could probably find a sponsor for the 4th of July parade if they want.
Right, well, I also don't think not many people clamor to watch their TV screens on the 4th of July, and if they are, they're probably going to watch like Stranger Things coming out. But I think like they're going to go back and be curious. I think people will be curious about whatever he decides to say. But I think the broadcast decision of showing it. I mean, you have to be there in some capacity. So CNN probably has.
We're woefully late for a break, and we'll be right back. So hold your thoughts, and we'll be right back after this.
A pedal to the metal, always did what I told. Till I found out that my brand new clothes came secondhand from the rich kids next door. And I grew up fast, I guess I grew up mean. There's a thousand things inside my head I wish I ain't seen. And now I just wander through a real bad dream. Feeling like I'm coming apart at the seams, but thank you, Jack.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Romeo, and Ira Fussfeld. Right before the break, I asked you all to hold that thought. Did any of you?
No.
Okay. I did.
But okay,
I did. I was interested in whether or not Pittsfield is still doing the July 4th parade and how that fits into this whole thing.
It is happening.
They have a parade, no tanks.
No tanks as far as I'm aware, but it will continue with balloons and bands and...
Fire trucks.
Always a big time.
At least one. Yeah.
Where is that? Pittsfield?
It goes through a long-standing tradition throughout downtown Pittsfield.
Is. But now, what do they call it? The 4th of July, the normal 4th of July celebration in Washington.
Is a Capitol 4.
Is that going on?
Yeah.
Yes.
But there, some people are complaining because the two are kind of being glommed together by the White House and the president. And the people who are participating in a Capitol 4th are saying, well, we don't really want to be a part of this. So they're trying to separate them, but we'll see what happens.
And one of the other after effects of this presidential thing is they're closing down Reagan Airport for an hour and a half.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. But, again, it's all fine. John Stamos is hosting.
Oh.
Tony writes to us. We have a lot of letters. Tony writes to us and says it would help if the situation in the home countries of those seeking asylum in the country was resolved. The only problem here is that Trump cut the funds we were sending to the countries, such as Honduras and Guatemala, that was to combat the problems. He cut the funds in an effort to stop the immigration movement. Unfortunately, that action increased the movement.
And how do you know that? I mean, how do you know he didn't do it exactly for that reason, to aggravate what's going on? I mean, that's what's so pathetic about the whole thing. We do know that by taking that money away, you make things worse, and he certainly knows that.
Charles says one part of this immigration question has not been discussed is the simple fact that Latin American immigrants have quotas that are so low as to restrict legal immigration to a trickle. Having served in Honduras with the U.S. Peace Corps for 3 years now, I know firsthand how hard it is to legally immigrate to the U.S. from countries that we have deemed, quote, undesirable. Nancy says, good morning. It seems like when there are refugees and asylum seekers in other countries, the UN or Red Cross or other international organizations often step in and provide assistance and oversight. This is an international crisis. Why aren't we hearing about their involvement in this crisis.
So I did look that up, and the Red Cross has been sending aid specifically to the borders for the past 6 months, but they issued a press release just a few days ago saying that it's not enough, and they haven't been releasing it through the federal government, but through NGOs working in border areas.
Exactly.
And so, again, that's the disconnect.
Yeah. I mean, the Congress or the White House could say, we need the Red Cross in here. They have administrators who are used to dealing with widespread disasters and crises.
But that's the problem. They're not.
Exactly.
I mean, Gene writes and says the Red Cross is not being allowed in because the cruelty is the point. Mm-hmm. It's a policy of deterrence announced by John Kelly in April of 2017. John Kelly is now profiting from for-profit detention centers.
That's horrible.
That's a whole other issue.
Robin writes, thank you for being here and speaking of this important issue at the border. I don't think we as Americans can wait for a dysfunctional government to help these people. I feel like we need a plan without the help of government to go into border facilities and provide hot food and bottled water. Clothing.
What makes you think they're going to let you in? I mean, we know that AOC wasn't allowed in. She was allowed to see something, and we got some pictures of this thing. But frankly, they're not going to allow you in.
And that's right. And her point is that if large groups of people and contractors and builders and so forth come, that maybe some work could be done. This is from Rob, who says, to all the email contributors, writing emails to WMC and pointing out the same problem over and over doesn't actually wash the hair of any migrant. What have these people actually done to make the situation better? Donate, letter to Congress, refurbish a church to help house migrants. Reading those emails over and over is just WMC playing to its base. Alan.
Well, I don't think that's true, and I don't know how to answer it except that, you know, that's a perception on the part of somebody who writes a letter, that we tell the truth. We always have played truth to power. We're going to continue to do that, you know, and there'll be a few people out there who are on the Trump side who just say nothing doing.
Well, I would argue that the volume of letters on any one topic that might air on this panel, if you get a lot of letters on a topic, it shows people that it's a topic that is important to people in the community, that's representative of the community, and perhaps there are people listening who can do something about it who will say, hey, there's a lot of people angry about this.
Well, you're right, but there are also the trolls, and we hear from one or two of them almost every single day. So you may get 100 letters, and you may get one on the other side. We tend to play that one on the other side, right, Joe? Just to make sure that everybody understands that there is another side, but it's inappropriate in a way. It's not proportional.
That's right, and it's sort of like the old man on the street thing, where you go out and you talk to six people, and three people say yes, they believe this, and three people say no, we don't believe it, and then you end up thinking, all right, well.
Well, but what happens if you have 1,000 people say
right.
yes? It's terrible.
How many people
what's
did you talk
on?
To?
And one guy says the opposite.
Right.
You know, and you say, okay, well, let's be fair about this. Let's play that one guy. Well, when we make that decision, basically, it's creating the impression that there may be more on the other side. I don't believe it.
Sean writes, just want to mention something. You see how well the government is running the border issue. Do we really want them running our health care system nationally when we see that federal, state, and local governments can't handle anything?
Well, certainly. Let's face it. We have no question that Donald Trump said he was going to have he had a health care plan, much better than any health care plan that he was trying to dismantle. He was going to do it. Can I ask the panel a question?
Yes.
It's a rhetorical question. Have we seen any such thing? No. The answer is no. He's never come up with a plan. He kept saying he was going to do something better, and he never has.
2 weeks.
That's 2 weeks. What?
He usually says.
Yeah,
in 2 weeks.
A couple of weeks, I'll have something for you.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll see it. It's coming soon. Catherine.
I always tell my editors.
That's
Catherine says,
two more weeks.
Good morning. I just received from Representative Stefanik a shameless piece of propaganda from the Republicans about the border. Not unusual, I guess, but it states the taxpayers paid for the whole preparation, printing, and mailing. How is that legal? It's constituent services, right?
Right.
All right. Michael says, please explain how a candidate who proposes to do away with private health insurance can win an election against Trump.
Well, they didn't propose to do away with it. Read that again.
Some of them have. Yeah. Some of them did raise their hands during the debate.
Please explain how a candidate who proposes to do away with a private health insurance can win an election against Trump.
Yeah, and wasn't it just Bernie and Elizabeth Warren who said that?
No, I think others raised their hands. I think they probably can't win against Trump.
Right, but I thought that the majority are saying, like Medicare, you have government Medicare. If that's all you want, then you'll get it. But if you want to get supplemental health care through a private carrier, you can still do that.
It was one of those dumb questions where you're it's a complicated subject, and it's like, raise your hand or don't raise your hand.
And answer in 30 seconds.
And some of them raise their hands and then tried to walk it back.
And half of them couldn't hear it.
There is a point there that, you know, Some of the Democrats do need to be a little careful about what they're saying as they attempt to play to the base, because they will struggle in a general election.
Yeah, I agree. Not only that, but there have been polls, Chris, that have shown that people, unbelievably in my mind, really want to continue with private health care insurance. And we're talking about a majority. So at least. So people who have a good deal right now, like their doctors, are afraid that things are going to change. Whether you like it or not, they are on the side of keeping things the way that they are. And they are afraid that if you make a change, people who don't have access to health care now will get it, and that will decrease their own access. That's the way it is.
Gillibrand actually did, I thought, a decent job explaining her position, which was that eventually you go to one system, but there would be a transition period, and people would get to keep their own doctor and then walk over to the government system. She was very careful about it.
Right, and some of the other candidates have said that too, that there will be a public option that you can choose to stay with your private or go to the public option.
What did Buttigieg say about
Something along those lines,
I think.
He
said, I didn't handle it.
No. There was something about like pockets of Medicare. Something. Did you? I have to look that up. Okay, I'm sorry. It was a weird phrase. I was like, what does that mean?
I don't know.
Well, what I'm hoping is that after the next debate, which I guess gathers at the end of this month, that will start weeding this field down. The people who are at 0 and 1, if they're still at 0 and 1 at the end of this month, they're not going to be able to raise any money, and all they're doing is wasting time. We've seen you. You've auditioned for vice president or the cabinet secretary. Mm-hmm. Let's clear the field and get serious here, because the more voices out there, on the one hand, it seems to me Democratic, small d, but we need to beat Donald Trump, and if they're going to be infighting, it's the longer they infight, the longer it's going to, the harder it's going to be for that happening.
I don't know. Hillary didn't get a big help from that in the last election when it was a big field and only her for months and months. So I'm not sure how that plays out.
You mean once the field cleared?
You didn't have to clear the Republican field faster.
I think she was not a good candidate.
And why do people stay in? Why is Gillibrand staying in? She has not yet cracked 1%. The same thing for de Blasio. This is a guy who had nowhere else to go, so he runs for president. And the people in New York don't like him. He can't get a beyond 1%. I think he may be 0.2%, and I'm not sure about this, higher than Gillibrand. So there's got to be a reason these guys are staying with it. You say to show that they should be a vice presidential candidate. But, hey, I can understand that argument from Kamala Harris, who I think at this stage of the game may well be the candidate for president. But I don't understand why so many of these people are in and stay in.
Well, and that could be, you mentioned too, but really there are like 17 that you could make that argument to that haven't cracked even 1%.
I hate to quote Bill Maher, but did you see his program last week? He eliminated 10 right from the beginning, and he had, you know, he did it humorously. He eliminated Gillibrand, and he said Al Franken says hello, you know, that sort of thing. But
do you think that's true, by the way, just for the sake of a little deviation here? Do you think it's true that her unpopularity comes down to the Franken affair?
No.
I think
no.
that plays into it. I do think it plays into it, because every time she's mentioned on social media, you get 3,700 replies about Al Franken. I don't think it's the entirety of her problem, right, but I think it's part of it for sure.
Yeah.
I think the Al Franken thing plays into a, just a general perception that she's disingenuous and that she's not really who she says that she is. And there are other parts of her background that play into that too, like, you know, working for tobacco companies and...
And her switch on guns,
almost every issue
under the
sun. Betrayal
of the Clintons, yeah. I mean, I actually think she was right, and I'm not angry about Al Franken, as you know, I understand that others are. I think you're right, but there are way other things that make me upset about her.
And de Blasio needs a job. He's got term limits, so he, you know, I could see him being the secretary of something.
Why doesn't he just buy a third term like Mike Bloomberg?
He doesn't have the resources.
That was a rhetorical
question. Oh, okay.
All right, let's go to back to the letters. Frank writes, the Trump supporters always scream about how the migrants are illegal. Little do they know, they themselves break more laws driving to work every morning. Seeking asylum is not illegal, and first offense for being in the country unauthorized is a misdemeanor, if I'm not mistaken. David says Trump has already said he will make a patriotic speech and talk about health care. Well, once you add health care into the mix, it's clearly going to be a highly partisan speech. And knowing Trump's stream of consciousness style, it will probably go downhill from there.
To quote Dick Nixon, I have a plan.
I have a plan.
Yeah, and that was a great point, because even if Trump has the greatest intentions, once he gets up there, he starts riffing. And then you don't know where the heck it's going to go.
Don't you sort of want to watch just for that reason? Like, what if he just falls apart at a microphone? And it could happen any time. Look at the homeless speech. I have to watch him.
Well, will it matter? That's the issue.
Yeah, that's it. Will it matter?
Well, it does matter. I mean, his approval rating is dismal. I mean, all of this does matter. People always say, well, he's going to get elected anyways, and he may end up being reelected. But I do think this stuff does take a toll, and a lot of people have made up their mind about him.
Well, you know, the base has not moved, right? Do we agree on that?
Oh, that's tough. It's really tough to judge.
What we're seeing in the polls is that the base has not moved. The issue with him has got to be those three or four states which made a difference and got him elected, and he is underwater in each and every one of them now. So that has to be much on his mind.
Well, the base is relatively small anyways. I mean,
it's 40%, right?
Maybe a little smaller than that even. I mean, one of the strange things about the Trump presidency is that he has played so much to the base and not tried to expand his popularity into the middle. It's a strategic decision that is pretty baffling, really. I mean,
Well, I think what the plan is, and who am I to know what his plan is, but his plan is to stay with the base, keep them there, and at the last minute make a play for the middle.
I think the plan is to make whoever the Democratic nominee is seem as terrible and as unpopular as Trump is, and then hope it's a low turnout kind of grudge match affair.
I agree with that 100%. I think that the Democrats have got to get the black vote in overwhelming numbers. They've got to get the Latin vote in overwhelming numbers. They've got to get those soccer moms who they needed terribly. If all of those people are motivated to come out, then the Democrat is going to win. It's not going to happen if the Democrats are screwing around and about stuff like, you know, killing our health care.
Couple more letters before we go. Teresa writes, is Chris serious? Unfortunately, the American electorate is ignorant. They fell for a reality show con man, and they are still buying the bridge he is selling.
That's not exactly true. We know that the American public voted for Hillary by an extra 3 million votes. So it isn't as if everybody in the American people fell for it. It's just that we have a pretty electoral system.
That's the technical.
I'd also argue that the voters were faced with a pretty unappealing choice. I mean, I still continue to believe that Trump could have only beaten Hillary, and Hillary could have only beaten Trump. It was just a bad choice.
Say that again.
I think I said it right. Right. Yeah, Trump could have only beaten Hillary. Almost any other Democrat, I think, would have beaten him, and I think any other Republican would have beaten her.
I would love to answer, but then we'll get 100 letters saying, give it up, Hillary's fast. So I'm not going to. But you're wrong.
How can it be wrong? She lost to the worst candidate who's ever run for office.
That is so Rosemary.
That's the proof, isn't it? Isn't the proof in the pudding on that?
Yeah, that is so Rosemary. I'm not going to, but you did.
Also, Rosemary,
I'm not going to call you an idiot, but I would.
Pull the pin on the grenade as we have 12 seconds to go. Right, exactly. My thanks to everybody. That was great. It was a nice conversation. Thank you all very much. Very vigorous and lively. I thank you. Alan, be well. Thank you very much. Have a lovely holiday.
I'm
and Jen, Chris, Rosemary, and Ira, thank you. Roundtable will be back on Friday morning. We'll be back right after this with more show.